This episode is brought to you by the Canby Liquor Store. Father's Day is coming, and they really have everything your dad really wants. From hand-selected gifts that you won't find anywhere else, to small-batch bourbons and unique craft beers. Find them in the Fred Meyer Shopping Center.
This episode is also brought to you by Odmo's Pizza in Canby. Handmade, awesome pizza plus craft beer, wine, and cider delivered. Call them today at 503-263-8444.
Welcome to Now Hear This Canby,
your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
If it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me?
The plans to add tolling to Interstate 205 could spike traffic on Highway 99E through Canby by as much as 40%, according to a presentation Oregon Department of Transportation officials gave the Canby City Council this week. Officials offered the presentation during the council's regular meeting Wednesday night as part of the statewide transportation authority's ongoing survey collecting feedback on various tolling models and systems. ODOT officials offered detailed information on 5 alternatives under construction for tolling in the corridor and the impact each one is expected to have on the surrounding roads and thoroughfares, including Highway 99E through Canby. Under several of the proposals, Canby would get slammed with a predicted 30 to 40% increase under alternatives 1 and 3. And a 20 to 30% spike under Alternative 4. Matt Dolata, Alternatives Analysis Lead for WSP, a Portland-based infrastructure and traffic consultant hired by ODOT, noted that Alternatives 3 and 4 are the ones that have so far been recommended to the agency for further review. On Oregon 99E and downtown Canby, we see the potential for a significant increase in volume over the course of the day, Dolata told councilors, noting that the largest impacts would be during off-peak hours. Not surprisingly, several council members expressed concerns about these numbers. Councilor Sarah Spoon pointed out that Highway 99E, with its current usage, is already a source of near endless complaints from many whom drive it throughout the week. I think a lot of our community feels like it's already kind of stretched, she said. It was built for a community that lived here 15 years ago, and we're growing and expanding, and traffic is only getting worse. Council President Tim Dale criticized the lack of clarity ODOT has presented as to why the agency needs more revenue and what it would be spent on. Your problem statement on revenue is not clear. What do you need revenue for? What's it going to go to? He asked. I'll be honest with you, you're dealing with a community that has a great deal of skepticism as to the real intent. You're dealing with a community that is going to look at your solution, which is to toll 205, as yet another example where Clackamas County is going to bear the cross of funds being diverted to Portland causes. The only real solution to easing congestion on 205 is to add lanes to it, Dale said. And while ODOT officials indicated some of the toll revenue would go towards interstate widening projects, this was not made very clear in the presentation Wednesday. Without more lanes on 205, Dale summed up, the tolling program is entirely unappealing equation for local residents. Worse, more expensive commute without any discernible decrease in congestion. This is not a problem statement or solution statement that we can sell to Canby residents or Oregon City residents or I-205 commuters, said Dale. A longtime commuter himself, it's not clear at all where the benefit is to us. Before COVID-19, about 100,000 vehicles traveled the section of I-205 between Stafford Road and 213 every day, causing over 6 hours of congestion. This section is the only two-lane segment on I-205 in Oregon. To see the full presentation by ODOT officials, find this story on our website, canbyfirst.com.
City and county leaders gathered Thursday night to mark the official grand opening of Canby's new drive-in, with a ribbon-cutting ceremony and a free screening of E.T. the Extraterrestrial. But it was much more than that. They were also there to, quote, celebrate ingenuity in the face of challenge, as Canby Area Chamber Director Kyle Lang explained.
Many times when we hear people speak about government, and the Fairgrounds and Event Center is attached to Clackamas County, ingenuity, inventiveness, insight, and expediency are not words that always rise to the top of the list. But this group of folks up here is here to prove you wrong and to show the other side of what is possible. In the face of uncertainty in light of the COVID crisis, it would have been easy to simply hunker down and allow things to unfold at their own pace, to take a pause and simply await relief from the situation we find ourselves in. But that's not what happened, and that gives us a reason to celebrate.
What did happen is that Event Center staff spent months repositioning the 112-year-old Fairgrounds property to host events that fit within the county's Phase 1 coronavirus guidelines, including the Taste of Fair food court, the drive-thru Cuts Forth Screws In, the soon-to-come Scare Fair, and of course, Fairgrounds Features. The drive-in represented a partnership between the Fairgrounds, the county, the city of Canby, and many local sponsors, including Columbia Distributing, Imrick Construction, Wilson Construction, Canby Landscape Supply, and Canby Excavating. It was an example of partnership in action and of community-minded folks rising to the occasion, so said City Councilor and Fair Board member Greg Parker.
What we have here is an example of organizations, both the city and the county and the fairgrounds and businesses deciding that instead of things that can't be, things that can be. I've been inspired in this community as businesses have adapted to a wildly different landscape, and that's what we're seeing here.
Fair Board President Ted Coons recalled the 2019 Clackamas County Fair when his organization unveiled its new master plan for the historic fairgrounds and events center.
You know, a year ago during the fair, which would have happened, you know, 2 weeks ago, we unveiled a new master plan for the fairgrounds. And we talked about replacing the livestock building and other things like that and things we wanted to get done. Well, then this little thing called COVID-19 came up. And when COVID-19 came up, one of the things we talked about during the master plan was thinking outside the box. Well, I tell you what, when we did the master plan a year ago, we never thought we'd be talking drive-in theater. But what a wonderful thing this is and what a wonderful plan it's turned out to be. You know, the reality is we see so much potential in this, and hopefully it takes off. The community, the county, the metro area, everybody embraces what's going on here and we continue to grow. Because some point in the future, I'd like to see that over in the yellow lot, or someplace in this facility, we actually have a real drive-in.
The drive-in theater will continue to be open through September, weather permitting. For the latest showtimes and to purchase tickets, visit canbycinema8, that's number8.com.
Canby's playgrounds will officially reopen as soon as city crew have the chance to clean and disinfect play equipment, following new guidance from state health officials Friday. At a press conference, Governor Kate Brown and representatives of the Oregon Health Authority announced that Phase 1 counties, which includes Clackamas, would soon be allowed to reopen playgrounds and outdoor public pools for the first time in 6 months. The state was making this surprise move, officials explained, because of the decline COVID-19 rates Oregon has seen in recent weeks and ever-increasing evidence that shows transmission of the novel coronavirus is much less likely outdoors. Canby Mayor Brian Hodgson confirmed Friday evening that the city officials have received clearance from the state to reopen playgrounds once they have been cleaned and sanitized. "This is good news from the governor's office," he told Now Hear This, Canby. "Hopefully we can get them cleaned up and open so they can be a nice break for parents that are home with kids that are trying to do distance learning. Let the kids go out, run free, burn off some steam. It's long overdue, but I suppose this is better than late than never." The timing of the announcement, the press conference where state officials announced they were looking at reopening playgrounds, was late Friday morning, but the go-ahead did not come until that afternoon. The timing of the announcement, the press conference where state officials announced they were looking at reopening playgrounds late Friday morning, but the go-ahead did not come out until that afternoon. The timing could have been better. A fact that Hodgson admitted was more than a little frustrating. "You know, it's Friday afternoon before holiday weekend," he said. "Cities and counties are running with a skeleton staff. It would have been nice if they could have given us a heads up yesterday so our crews could have spent the day today having the parks ready to go for the weekend." Left unanswered is the $1 million question, or at least the $475,000 question. Will Canby's new splash pads see a 2020 opening after all? The new guidelines offered by the state would seem to clear the way for it, but Hodgson was unable to confirm this yet. "We're investigating that, and we'll announce something as soon as we know for sure," he said. Of the spray park itself, he added, "I mean, it's done. It's just waiting for the go-ahead for the kids to be able to go out and enjoy it."
Clackamas County teams orchestrated a dramatic rescue of a Canby man, his 7-year-old daughter, and their family dog in the Mount Hood National Forest Thursday. Around 2:30 p.m. Wednesday, September 2nd, Canby resident Camille Monroe called 911 from the Devil's Peak Trailhead to report that her husband, 37-year-old Peter William Monroe, their 7-year-old daughter Layla, and their dog Buck had been missing for more than 24 hours. The previous evening, Camille had arrived at their remote campsite to join the rest of the family on a camping trip, police said, but no one was there. She figured they were on a hike, but they never returned. On Wednesday morning, she searched, but still could not find them. Camille finally found Peter's truck at the Devil's Peak Trailhead. The keys were still there, and the daughter's stuffed animals were inside the vehicle. Concerned, Camille called 911. Clackamas County Sheriff's Office Search and Rescue Coordinators activated a rescue mission Wednesday afternoon. About 50 searchers ended up participating in the mission. They worked through the night with additional resources from the 304th Rescue Squadron and 125th Special Tactics Squadron deploying to the field at about 2 a.m. to assist the tired crews. At approximately 6 a.m. on Thursday, searchers from the 304th were able to make voice contact with Peter. Took at least another hour for them to reach the family due to the difficult terrain. Peter was injured and unable to walk. Layla and Buck were in good spirits, according to the sheriff's office, but needed assistance. They had been stuck in the wilderness for over 48 hours without supplies. After stabilizing Peter in a litter, crews began the exhausting process of carrying him out of the remote location through the difficult terrain. They reached a waiting medical crew on Still Creek Road about 7 miles from Highway 26 near Rhododendron at about 12:30 p.m. on Thursday, September 3rd. Peter Monroe was transported to an area hospital for his injuries. Before that, though, he had a message for the volunteers who had rescued him and his family.
"Hello, this is Peter Monroe, and I just wanted to thank all the first responders and everybody else that helped get me out of that hole. I don't think I would have made it out, especially without any other adults. And so I owe you guys my life. Thank you. You guys saved myself, my daughter's, and my dog's life. I couldn't tell you thank you enough. It's really awesome that they're so selfless."
The pilots who command aircraft like Chinooks for the U.S. military have a fire burning in them that sets them apart from the civilians they protect. In at least one case, that flame was lit and kindled while sweeping hangars in our very own Aurora State Airport. As a boy in Canby, Josh Link remembers playing with toy airplanes and daydreaming about how cool it would be to be up in the sky. He didn't know at that time how far his childhood dream would take him. A job at the Aurora State Airport, eventually enlisting in the U.S. Army, becoming a warrant officer one, and then undergoing flight training to be among a prestigious and highly trained class of pilots commanding one of the legendary Chinook helicopters for our armed forces. Josh grew up as the oldest of five children and graduated from Canby High School in 2012. He enrolled in Clackamas Community College and got a job sweeping floors and cleaning planes for management waste at the Aurora State Airport. It was at the airport where his childhood love for aviation was rekindled and a new path emerged before him. One that would place him in the cockpit of an American military icon. To fly airplanes in the Army, you must first start by flying helicopters. At the time, Josh had only had experience with planes. He remembers seeing a helicopter in a hangar of Aurora State Airport, but never saw himself flying one. At the time, the helicopter was as foreign as another language to the young man. But he persevered, and before he knew it, he had moved from Texas to Fort Rucker, Alabama, to attend flight school. Josh would eventually master the unique language of helicopters and would even take control of one of the most iconic aircraft in the U.S. military, the Chinook. The Chinook has long been considered the transport workhorse of the U.S. Army since the 1960s, when it was originally fielded during the Vietnam War to offer heavy-duty troop and supply transportation. Josh says that ability to support the troops and the Army ground game is the very thing he is most excited about finishing his schooling. Josh is still in the early stages of Chinook training portion of his schooling at Fort Rucker. Since his training began in January of this year, he has learned about the science and mechanics behind helicopters. He is looking forward to the missions and the work that is ahead of him, and plans to make a career of serving in the Army. While he doesn't know yet exactly where he would like to end up, he does know one thing. He would like to keep flying for as long as possible. The Canby Fire District is advising residents of a high wind event predicted for Monday, September 7th. Chief Jim Davis says that the Clackamas County Office of Emergency Management and the National Weather Service has officially put out a notice for a high wind event in the greater Portland metro area from 5 p.m. Monday through 1 p.m. Wednesday. Winds of 15 to 25 miles per hour are expected out of the northeast, with gusts up to 55 miles per hour. The highest winds starting late Monday afternoon and lasting through the night. Emergency alerts are expected to start going out Sunday night. Chief Davis intended a virtual meeting Sunday with all agencies, including Portland General Electric's Incident Command staff. PGE may shut down power if anticipated winds hit any areas of Clackamas County. The hardest hit area is expected to be the Highway 26 corridor from Mount Hood to Boring, officials said. PGE will be monitoring the event throughout Clackamas, Multnomah, and Washington counties. Canby Fire will staff additional firefighters Monday afternoon and throughout the night. Hey, Frankie, do you ever wonder why some businesses aren't, like, more transparent?
Oh, yeah. Like, some of the old buildings downtown are so dark. Get some more windows, you know?
No. I mean, like, transparent as in being open and honest about their business practices.
Oh.
Yeah. Like, DirectLink is a good example. They don't have internet data caps or charge extra fees for high usage.
Oh, yeah. Which is great with all the internet I've been using since this whole COVID situation started.
They also don't charge infrastructure build fees like some other providers. And they're active in our community, too. Check out their philanthropic efforts at directlink.coop/community.
Did you know that they also hold an annual meeting every year where members can talk directly with the board of directors and upper management?
Talk about transparent. You won't see any other companies being that accessible. DirectLink really is here for us. Call 503-266-8111 or visit directlink.coop to learn more today.
And on the Canby conversation today, I'm out at the Dumeku Farmstead in Malala with the owner, Dave Bradfute. Hi, Dave.
Hello.
And his daughter, Madison Mitchell, who runs the place from what I hear.
Yes. Hi.
So, met you guys at the Canby Farmers Market. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the farm?
So, we are working towards a permaculture type farm. Mm-hmm. We raise animals out here right now. We're trying to get a garden going. That's coming up. We've been out here about a year and moving pretty quickly with that. The idea of it was to be able to provide food for ourselves and be sustainable, as well as be able to give food to our community.
Tell us about the name.
Dumeku.
and tell us about some of the funny pronunciations you've heard people try.
Okay. So Dumeku comes from my wife, and it's what she used to refer to Madison and Mackenzie. Madison's a twin. She has a twin sister named Mackenzie. And
it's German.
It is, yes. German, yeah. for silly cow.
Okay.
And so that's what she would call them when they were, you know, being a little squirrely.
Oh, I love that so much. Yeah. Silly cow, Dumeku. That's great. Your wife is German?
She is, actually, yes.
Okay.
Not from Germany, but her heritage is.
Yeah.
And so she spent some time there in high school, and she loved it.
Yeah.
And she brought a lot of it back, so.
Okay, including some
funny terms.
Choice phrases.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess Dumeku might be one of the more PC phrases, though.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. We did go through a few different ones, and that was the one that just really stuck with everybody.
You know?
With a family this big, you got to figure out where that middle ground is,
right.
You know?
Yeah. It is kind of a farmstead. You mentioned there's a little bit of a commune living out here.
Yes. So we have 33.2 acres out here.
Okay.
And in this house, Madison, her twin sister, and her husband, and their child.
Okay.
So my grandson. Ashley and grandma, I'm trying to work through everybody here, my wife. So their grandma, is that seven people that live here full time?
Yeah.
And then, my two younger kids from, Canby, actually, they're here every other weekend, actually come out and spend some weeks out here during the summertime too.
Yeah, cool.
So
yeah,
they spend a lot of time out here as well.
Cool.
So
yeah, when you started to say 33, I thought you were saying 33 people.
Oh no,
acres.
You got to the point too, and I'm like, that's probably not people. Acres.
Yeah, 33.2 acres.
Yeah. Well, Madison, tell us a little bit about your background and what does permaculture mean?
So my background is I went to college at Oregon State originally to become a vet, and it just didn't work out.
You guys can't see. She's literally like stroking two cats.
There's two cats on my lap.
As we're talking.
These two were rescued too. This black one was feral, and now he's a lover.
Oh, yeah. Nothing feral about that cat.
Yeah, nothing.
Just ran away. The other one.
So I got my degree at Oregon State in biology. Mm-hmm. So I really have no farming background at all. And the second we decided we were going to look into doing this, I just got a bunch of textbooks and just started, Dave and I both just started researching and learning. And I just went through the CCC Organic Farming Program to learn about gardening because I didn't know anything. That's why the garden is in process right now. And then permaculture, you probably have a better idea of the definition.
So permaculture really originates. One of the biggest purveyors of permaculture is Joe Salatin.
Joe.
Yes, sorry.
I'm sure he's listening.
Right. So basically what it is getting the animals to naturally work the land for you, right?
And oh, cool.
So you're rotating your animals.
As someone who lives on some acreage myself, that sounds great.
Yeah, right? Yeah. So, you know, like the meat chickens we raise, we build these things called chicken tractors, and we pull them to a new piece of grass every day, right? So they're getting their pasture raised, they're getting new.
Like chicken tractors?
Yeah. We'll show you those on the tour here.
You can even see one in process that I'm building right now.
Yeah.
Sounds like something out of the Flintstones.
They're pretty slick. And then with our pigs, we do that the same thing. We move the pigs to a new piece of pasture every week. And then the Eggmobile out there, it moves. That's where our layers are, one of the places our layers are, and it moves.
Every two weeks. In the winter, we move it about once a week when the grass is low and not very nutritious.
Yeah. So when we're actually in the middle of starting to till and level the field, and we're going to put pastures out here, and what will end up happening when we get cows, the cows will go through, right, and they'll do their thing in the pasture. And then the chickens will come behind them and break everything up, help fertilize the soil again, and bring back all the really good nutrients. And the pigs will be in that rotation too, and we'll just move them through to different paddocks. Mm. And it's really good for the dirt. It's really good for the soil. It's really good for the animals.
Yeah.
It basically takes them and puts everything back into the earth. Everything that they produce goes right back into it, and it just continues to grow and get better for you.
Yeah. So I love that, both from in terms of, you know, less work on the person, at least once you get it up and running, it's like a little bit, but kind of sort of a guided ecosystem.
Yeah,
exactly. That's exactly what it is. Yeah.
Love it. So do you have to sing like songs from Lion King every day to get it started, like Circle of Life?
No, but we have sang to our baby animals. Uh-huh. Our goats got sick. Uh-huh. And we name a lot of our animals after musicians.
Oh, okay.
So whenever an animal gets sick, we play that musician.
Okay. Yeah, right.
Yeah, we have emus named Glenn Danzig and Jerry Only.
Okay.
And a goat named Bowie, and he is problematic, so he gets to listen to Bowie songs all the time. Yeah. So we do sing to the animals quite a bit.
Does it help?
I actually think so.
Yeah.
We had a bummer goat that was born, and I brought him inside, and I was syringe feeding him, and he was not doing good. He was having seizures, and my mom, his name was Iggy, he ended up dying, but his name was Iggy, and my mom put on Iggy Pop, and he stopped having seizures. So now we do it with all the animals, because it just feels like it helps. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's fun.
The farmer's market, you guys were not selling animal products. You had tell us about that side of things.
So that is what my wife really works on, is we sell pickles there, chow chows, corn relish, jellies, jams, bacon jam, which is a really big hit for us.
Yeah. Tell us about that. we don't have a jar of it, but... I had a photo on our Facebook page. I can repost that for you guys, but it looks disgusting.
Right.
It really does.
It looks absolutely horrendous, but you said it's a big hit.
People love it. It's amazing. It does.
Yeah. I mean, it's got brown sugar, apple cider vinegar, balsamic vinegar, thyme, pepper,
onions.
So it's a mixture of stuff. And what it's really good is you heat it up and you put it in, you know, your scrambled eggs, or put it on a grilled cheese or a hamburger, and it definitely gives the food an extra punch.
Yeah, that's something she came up with? I've never heard of that.
I'm not sure how she came about it, to tell you the truth. She just said, because we actually processed one of our hogs.
Yeah.
And she said, I think I'm going to use Kevin. His name was Kevin Bacon. And so I think I'm going to use Kevin to make this stuff called bacon jam. We're like, all right, go for it.
We were all like, really?
Yeah, we tasted it and we're like, wow, that's really good.
So it's made with bacon or bacon grease?
With bacon. Yeah.
I think it has bacon grease.
It does have bacon grease as well.
But it has chopped up bacon. Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's pretty good stuff.
Yeah. And chow chow, that's a big thing as well.
Yeah. So that's a That's a sweet relish. Mm-hmm. It's a cabbage base, and then the actual pickling juice that she uses in those spices stay the same, but all the vegetables
sort
inside
of bread and butter kind of taste.
Kind of, yeah. And but what the difference is to any other relish is one, it's not pickles,
right?
But with the cabbage, we'll add any vegetables that we have around. Yeah. You know, so when we get to growing vegetables out in the garden, then we'll pull everything from that and what we have, you know, that we don't use, then we'll put it into the chow chow.
Yeah,
it's really good. It's a big hit.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Cool. Is that something you plan on continue to do, even as you sort of figure things that side of the business?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I mean, we're trying to hit different angles and you know,
see what works,
and what sticks. And you know, we've had really good luck with our animals, actually been doing pretty well at the Wilsonville and the Camby Farmers Markets.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
if it works, we'll keep doing it.
Yeah.
You know.
Cool. Yeah. So, obviously, you know, COVID, all the crazy stuff that's been happening this year, probably makes you guys think, living more off the land, being more self-reliant, is a pretty good idea. Has that kind of entered your head? Or, I mean, it sounds like this was what you were wanting to do anyway, but.
Yes. I mean, it absolutely plays into it a little more.
In the apocalypse.
Pretty much.
So, and interestingly enough, I think that, farmsteads and homesteads that are doing this type of thing. I mean, the chicken tractor is actually a really popular thing within the homesteading and farmsteading community. Mm-hmm. And I think people are really interested in getting their food from farms like this because of what's coming into the grocery store and people not really understanding and knowing what's going into the product that's being sold on the shelf, as opposed to something like this that's a bit more ethical in how the animals are raised.
Yeah.
Right. So it actually kind of helped out for the COVID did, because people got a little, for one, you know, the quote unquote food shortage.
Yeah.
That kind of fired things up a little bit. So yeah, I think it played into our favor a little bit.
So.
Honestly.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Culturally, I think we're seeing a shift. I mean, we went so like supermarkety and like, so you know, because there was discomfort, I think, with where food comes from,
right,
in that process, and so people kind of shied away from it, and that allowed, I think, the industry to probably go too far, you
right.
know, in some ways,
yeah,
in some of the processing and some of the factory style forms of agriculture that we saw,
yeah,
you know, but I think we're seeing this stuff is actually kind of cool and kind of interesting.
Yeah.
And, you know, people actually aren't as uncomfortable as they thought they would be. Actually want to know more about, you know, raising animals and growing food themselves.
Yeah.
And I mean, we were kind of forced to this year, but I think people found that they enjoyed it.
They did. And you know, an interesting thing that came out of this is that when we went to go purchase some of our broiler chickens, we had a hard time getting them because when COVID hit, all these people started buying all these chickens.
Right.
So it got a little difficult. And then at that point, we're like, well, we need to get an incubator. We need to figure out how we can start raising our own chickens. Yeah. So that's, but we have some downstairs that we just started that got into the brooder yesterday.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, we're working that direction. And then as far as culturally is about where your food comes from and stuff, it's interesting that you bring that up because one of the things that led me in this direction and got them on board was as I had gone vegan for a year, right? And you know, I watched all these movies and videos and stuff and started doing
bacon movies.
Yeah, and started doing a lot of my own research and stuff and I felt good when I did it, and I was a little concerned about where my food was coming from and how those animals were being treated.
Yeah.
So I did that, and being in a big household, it's hard to maintain any particular kind of diet because we all have things that we like.
Yeah.
So I just said to them, okay, I'll go back to eating meat, but I want to start raising our own food. Mm. And so that was one of the things that kind of kicked this whole thing off.
Yes. The ethical side.
Yeah.
Of things.
Yeah. For sure.
Yeah. I figured you weren't vegan anymore because we made it almost 15 minutes without you mentioning that you were
right,
vegan.
Right.
That is very true.
It is so true. Yeah.
Cool. Well, it's we're almost out of time here. Is there any way that folks can check you out online? Or I know you've got some social media up and going.
We do. We have, we're Dume Coup Farmstead
D U M M E K U H.
For our non German listeners. Yeah.
K U H F A R M S T E A D on both Facebook and Instagram.
Cool. So. Anything to add?
No, I think he covered it all.
Awesome. Well, we are going to poke around a little bit, get a little tour. It looks like it might have dried up. It's hard to tell.
Right. Kind of
spring comes up.
Yeah. But stay tuned for that. You said he wasn't going to drive crazy.
it is a little bit
it's
of a
jerk. Yeah.
Oh, it's so the ride's fault.
This was actually our first chicken tractor that somebody gave to us, but now it holds a bunny. But that kind of that held our very first chickens.
Yep. A lot smaller.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh,
that's why the water. I was wondering about the water pressure. So these chickens here, those are some of the layers that were not the ones that we hatched, but the last ones we purchased. And then we put a couple of our regular Rudy hens in there to help the transition when they go into the eggmobile. Because if they're there and they start to mother these, then they'll have an easier time and be protected when they go into the eggmobile. These are where we raise our meat birds.
Okay.
These guys are actually getting processed tomorrow morning. This is, we have a mobile kitchen right here. It's got a walk-in cooler in it, sink, two stainless steel tables. I pull the back down and we process our chickens right there.
They are looking hungry.
Yeah.
They're not getting fed today. No.
Okay.
They are hungry.
Yeah.
They're very hungry.
We don't want their crops full when we process them.
Yeah.
So. Moved out here a year ago. This was an old orchard, and it is an orchard.
Yeah.
But a lot of these trees weren't doing really well, so some of them we ended up cutting down a couple weekends ago. Some of them we're trying to getting ready to trim up and see if we can bring them back to life.
Yeah.
But we'll plant more fruit trees and nut trees out here.
Cool.
So we do have one rooster in here. He's becoming a rooster, I guess. He's back there. He's a beautiful bird.
Yeah.
Most of these are Easter eggers over here.
Yeah.
So you get your blues, your greens.
Eggs,
yeah.
The speckled and striped. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
We do have some speckled eggs.
We do, actually. Striped, I'll work on that one.
Yeah. The goose looks like the boss.
Three months old? Yeah. So she's not even full grown yet. This is Sox. She's pregnant. We're waiting on her to give us some piglets.
Waiting on you for something.
Yeah.
Oh, look back in the face.
She's a sweetheart. Yeah.
Something for the podcast?
She's usually pretty ducky. Huh. Here. Yeah, there's now you can talk. Yeah. Thank you. Talk to my face. If you go have your piglets, you can go back down the pasture with your babies.
We do ducks. I don't recommend them.
Yeah?
They're messy and gross and smelly.
Yeah?
But
don't let them hear you say that.
They do like the duck eggs. So,
do they?
Yeah.
They're bigger, right?
They are bigger and they're alkaline based as opposed to acidic based.
Okay.
And so they're better for baking. They make your cakes.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And stuff like that, a lot more fluffy.
Okay.
Yeah. So bakers love them.
Yeah. They fit the bill. Baby in you, is it?
Yeah, they're fairly young.
Hi.
This big one, this is Glenn.
Glenn the emu?
Glenn the emu.
Not sure about me. Oh, this one. Hi. Hey! This is a new camera. Hey! I'm trying to. I don't know if that's covered in the warranty.
Emu pecs?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I can ask.
What is that? They really like shiny things.
I guess. Oh, yeah. That's funny. Yeah, he did get a mark on it. I think I can wipe it off.
Their beaks are fairly soft.
Yeah.
They're actually the only bird that I allow to eat out of my hand because they are soft.
This is not bull crap.
Right? With our family, we get plenty of that.
Well, I'm in the media, so I'm used to it. I'm in the media.
Yeah.
Right. I'm usually the one making it, I guess.
That's all subjective.
This fence is not on.
Okay.
We've trained them with it on, and then now they just know not to use it. That's Jonesy, our other goose. He's a male, and he's way more scared than the female we have.
Yeah.
We have one rooster in here, too.
Cool. Well, thanks so much for showing me the place. It's awesome.
Thanks for coming out.
Joining us now is Donna Ellison of Ellison Team Homes, a firm serving all across the Portland metro area with three realtors based right here in Canby. Donna, can you tell us how Ellison Team Homes started?
I started in real estate. I grew up with my dad. He was a realtor. Mm-hmm. So I'm a second generation broker, and I grew up with him on weekends. And I learned a lot eventually working with him for several years and then going out on my own. Our family moved to Canby a couple of years ago, but we really didn't know how it was going to go. And within the first probably 3 months of being here, we literally fell head over heels in love with this place. We love the community, the spirit here. The first Christmas at Waite Park, I was literally crying because everybody was walking around saying Merry Christmas and people were drinking hot chocolate and we got in a carriage ride with the horse and it was just too much. You just realize it's special here. Real estate's always been my passion. It is my professional love. I enjoy the people, the relationships. So much comes out of kind of the intensity that you spend with people. You're really up in their business for a period of time. And sometimes it's a couple months, sometimes it's a couple years, sometimes it's a lifetime.
Yeah.
I feel very blessed at this point to have people that have been with me for almost my entire career. Mm-hmm. Clients that have bought and sold maybe 2, 3, 4, or 5 homes. I have one client that's bought and sold 8 homes with me.
Yeah.
3 generations. It's a beautiful business. It makes for a very full life. Mm-hmm.
How can people find you?
How can they not, really? we have a website, www.ellisonteamhomes.com.
Well, thank you, Donna.
Thank you for having me.
Joining us for the first time live is Matt Nelson. He's a graduate of Canby High School 2019. First time on the pod, actually, but really you had a big role in our early start. You were the Canby stats guy. And when we were first starting the podcast and trying to figure out how to create a local media outlet on like a 5 hours a week time frame on the side with full-time jobs and families, we found this guy on Twitter that was doing a lot of the stats and the sports results and really did a lot of our work for us that first year. Maybe can you start by telling us just a little bit about how you got into that?
So it started out in about 2016, which was about my freshman year. I was entering high school, and I had played lacrosse for about 8 years, probably. First grade all the way through eighth grade.
Wow.
And I knew that I wasn't going to be very athletic anymore. I wasn't going to be, I wasn't going to have much of a role when I was going to be playing these sports.
Yeah.
So I knew that I needed to find a new outlet, a new way to stay involved with the sports, which has always been my passion, that didn't involve me being an athlete.
Yeah.
And so I reached out, or rather my dad reached out to the head football coach, which was Mike Vaught at the time.
Right.
He was very supportive of us. He and JJ Stolzig both played major roles in getting me involved with all these sports. And Paul Huggins was who referred me over to Craig Evans also, who was the head basketball coach.
Yeah.
They were all very key to me finding this passion of mine here.
Yeah. And something that really, I mean, wasn't being done before you, and unfortunately hasn't been done since. I mean, they're not a really robust infrastructure for that at Canby High School, unfortunately. The coaches are very focused on obviously coaching the games and developing their athletes and whatnot, but the stats, something nerds like you and me are super interested in, is really like, we have to do it because no one else is going to, right?
Right. And fortunately for me, during my senior year, I had the pleasure of working with two others named Ruby Kaiser and Alex Monin.
Right.
They were able to take over for me for a little bit, at least, after I had graduated. Obviously, graduating makes it difficult for me to stay involved.
Right.
And so I was happy to pass the torch on to them.
Right. But now they've graduated as well.
Yes. And so hopefully there's someone that will step into that role this year.
Yeah. I mean, we've got time, right? Because there's no sports going on.
Absolutely.
Tell us a little bit about what you've been up to since high school.
So since high school, I have been, I moved down to Salem. I live with my older brother now. And we have, since then, we've gotten a new dog.
Okay.
named Luna, who's a very, very, very sweet girl. She's a rescue.
Awesome.
We got her down in Eugene.
Okay.
And then I also had tried to go to school at Chemeketa for a little bit.
Uh-huh.
Unfortunately, I didn't think that that school at least was for me, and so I've been looking at other schools in the area. But since then, I have been trying to find jobs, and I had the very fortunate stroke of luck, or whatever you would like to call it, to land here with Gumbo Yaya here at the yard.
Yeah, so that's where we are. Where we are, if you guys can hear a little bit of the background music, some of the noise here. The yard is this unbelievable place down here in Salem. I discovered it when I was working down here about 2 weeks after it opened, and it was just like, did I die and go to heaven? Like, this is like, how did they like get this out of my imagination, this like exact perfect thing? Like, if somebody was creating something in a lab, that would like be exactly what I would want. It's here. It's basically just all of these food carts surrounding like games and what do they call the beanbag game?
Yeah,
cornhole.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
A cornhole course, and there's craft beer inside. There's like 1,000 roll of doors. It's just this amazing place. Gumbo Yaya, the cart that you work at, is new, right?
Yes, we've been open. We're starting our sixth week today.
Okay.
We have been very, very lucky with how we've turned out so far. We're in a great location. We love it here at the yard.
Yeah.
And we happen to be just outside of one of the main sets of doors, which is very, very, very... I'm very happy for that.
Nice. You didn't have to have like a turf war with any
of
the other
carts. No. We got very lucky on that fact.
Tell us a little bit about the owner, Lisa. She's from Louisiana.
Lisa is, she's originally from Chicago.
Okay.
But she since then has, she lived in Louisiana, in New Orleans for 5 years.
Mm.
She went to the University of New Orleans and studied city planning.
New Orleans.
Yes, indeed. And she just so happened, when she was studying city planning in college, that happened to be when Hurricane Katrina had struck.
Oh, okay.
And so she was very much involved with the relief of that, working with a lot of neighborhoods and such.
Wow, that's got to be fascinating.
It was absolutely a fascinating story to hear. And hearing her passion for all this New Orleans life really was what made me go, oh, wow, this is going to be fun.
Mm. Yeah. And the kind of food that you guys serve is that authentic...
it's very authentic.
Cajun, spicy.
It's not very spicy hot, but like... it's got a lot of flavor in it and such.
Yeah.
We have the gumbo. We also have a pasta, which we reduce down the gumbo in a pan. And we add cream, sherry, and butter and serve it over a penne noodle pasta.
Okay. Roux.
Right? Roux, yes. Yeah. Roux is the base for the gumbo.
Okay.
The roux is very, very dark, very traditional. I don't remember the name of the chef off the top of my head right now, but he would describe it as like a dark chocolate color.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, well, anonymous chef, hat tip to him.
Yes.
And something that I've seen on your Facebook and I just saw on the card as well that raised my eyebrow, this, it's like in a bone.
Indeed, we have a bone marrow. We do have Cajun roasted bone marrow now.
Okay.
And that is a new addition to the cart. We serve that.
Found some homeless people. No, I'm just kidding.
No,
human bones.
No, these are in fact beef bones. Okay. Beef bones. But we found bone luge was a thing that started in Portland.
Oh, really?
Indeed. And it's been around the world now. It's in New York, it's been in Miami, it's been pretty close to everywhere here in the U.S.
You take a bone and you cut it in half.
Yes, we canoe cut. Okay. Canoe cut. So that it has like a little flow down the middle of it.
Yeah.
You scoop the marrow out and you spread it on a piece of garlic bread like toast, like butter with toast, right?
Yeah.
And then you eat that, and when you're done with that, you take your bone, you go inside and you get a shot of like a bourbon or rye or something like that. You pour it straight down the bone into
your mouth. Like a funnel.
Indeed.
Okay. And that's why they call it a luge.
Exactly.
Okay. Got it.
It's a very, very popular thing on social media and such.
I think I might have to do the bourbon first to psych myself up for eating the inside of a bone on toast. What does it taste like? Have you tried it?
I have tried it. It was very, very good.
Yeah?
The texture of it is kind of like it has the flavor of like steak.
Okay.
But the texture is more like a butter.
Interesting. Do you get a lot of people that like just want to try it because it's weird or think it's gross or like what's your reaction?
A lot of people are indeed intrigued by our product here. Yes, yeah, they walk up to our cart and they probably stare at that sign for a good 5 minutes and then go, "So tell me about this."
And
then often they will end up ordering
trying it. Cool.
It's only a weekend special though.
Okay, gotcha. Cool. Anything else you want to tell us about?
We are very, very fortunate. I wanted to say that, let's see here. You might want to pause it.
Yeah.
Does that pause it? Well, it tells you to cut?
Yeah, that tells me how to cut.
I'm trying to think.
Yeah. So, do we want to shout out any, because you guys, you're getting on Grubhub, but it's just being Salem, yeah? It would be all the way up. So, we can mention Grubhub if we work down in this area. Obviously social media, because even if they, you know, are up at Canby or whatever, that can still support you guys. So.
Yeah. I think Grubhub would be a good thing to mention.
Okay, cool. You ready?
Yeah.
Okay.
I did also want to shout out that we're going to be starting on Grubhub, actually.
Okay.
Cool little thing is that when we signed up, they sent us a little tablet and such, and they're sending us out a photographer today as well. They're going to be taking pictures of all of our product, and they're going to be posting it on their Grubhub website. We're going to be doing delivery down here in Salem as well.
Cool. So if you guys work down here in this area or ever just visiting down here, that's something you could check out their food.
Oh,
or
yeah.
Just come down here to the yard sometime. It's a great date night.
I would love to see people from Canby, especially if it's somebody I know, I would be very, very ecstatic.
Can you recognize them, though, with the masks and everything?
A lot of times you'd be surprised.
Yeah. I think we're all figuring out how to recognize people from the eyes. Cool. Well, it's been great to reconnect with you, man. Glad things are going well for you in these crazy times.
Absolutely. It was a pleasure meeting with you as well.
Hey, Frankie, you okay? You seem kind of down.
Yeah, I'm just bummed. Miss going to the wild hair. I know you can still get takeout and all, but it's just not the same.
You know they're open again, right?
What?
Yeah, they've been open for a while now. Don't you cover, like, the news?
Hey, I'm only human, okay?
Okay. Well, I can tell you that the Wild Hare and their amazing staff are thrilled to be open again for delicious meals and fun times. They are strictly following all the recommended safety guidelines, and they have the only covered outdoor patio in Canby, with lots of tables spaced 6 feet apart and umbrellas also spaced 6 feet apart, and fantastic ambiance. And hey, if you're still more comfortable with carryout, they can hook you up there too. Find their menu and other information online at thewildhairsaloon.net or check them out in Canby in Oregon City. Anything to add, Frankie? Frankie? Oh, I guess he left. God, he must have been really hungry. Now Hear This Canby is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. And of course, our show is edited by Cameron Clausen. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So a round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Canby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. To find more work from her, you can visit her website olivia13.com.
Now Hear This Canby is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The production of Now Hear This Studios, Canby's locally owned, full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe. And we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.